Welcome to Smashy Business Show. I am Ward Ahmed, and today we have a very special host with us. Please join me in welcoming Abdelmajid, an accomplished journalist with over a decade of experience in both print and digital newsrooms. His impressive career includes roles at the Express Tribune in Karachi, Gulf News, and Ed Design Magazine. Now, as the senior executive writer and presenter for Smashy Business and Smashy Sports, he's ready to bring his exceptional storytelling and insights to our show. Hello, hi, thank you for being here today.
How are you, Ward?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for making it.
Yeah, it's good to join such a esteemed publication, digital publication. And let's see, hopefully upwards and onwards from here.
Yeah. And, you know, just to begin, and just so you can tell the hot audience who you are, your career has been impressive, particularly your role as business editor in the Express Tribune in the leading newspaper of Pakistan. I have a question for you. Can you share one of the most exciting or challenging stories you covered during that time?
For a country like Pakistan, it's always the budget. Because the budget comes in June, and there's always something happening. There's always money going towards non-development expenditures. I know it's a very technical term, but it's always the budget. It was always special for me. So yeah, that is like one of the stories that I waited for throughout the year, because we would do live coverage of it. We would do live stories, social media, everything. Everything was about the budget of Pakistan for the next fiscal year. So yeah, that is the most important thing. Usually what we do, the good thing about my organization in Pakistan was that we could work across beats. So I worked on sports as well. Obviously, guys, we love sports, love to play sports and love to like watch sports. Cricket is very big in Pakistan. Football is now becoming big. So yeah, sports, lifestyle, national news, international politics, but yeah. My heart says business whenever I have to choose.
And what really, you know, instigated your love for journalism?
It was my parents, to be honest. They were very avid readers. My father always read the newspaper, like 3-4 newspapers in the morning. My mother used to read books, digests. So I guess that comes from your parents when you see them reading every day, something at least for 5 minutes. So yeah, reading, then eventually writing, and that journalism is the best career if you're into reading and writing, I guess. So yeah, eventually I moved into journalism, did my bachelor's in journalism, did my master's in journalism, and worked in a newsroom, a digital print, broadcast newsroom for nearly a decade.
Wow, that's really impressive. And just to begin, did you see what happened last night?
Yeah, it was a very confusing situation for the world, to be honest. We saw the Golan Heights attack by Hezbollah. Hezbollah has not taken responsibility of it. Israel says that Hezbollah did the attack. The US also thinks that Hezbollah did the attack on Golan Heights in Israel. And then the attacks by Israel on southern Beirut, everything is turning out to be in a form of anarchy or chaos right now in the world. After the conflict that is going on, and now Israel waging another war or a conflict with another country in the same region, I guess it's not good for business perspectives, and it's not good for the people. To be honest, when we talk about business, we talk about the people. At the end of the day, the people are the main thing, main notion that gets affected. And already Lebanon is going through inflation, and there's a higher cost of living, everything. They've seen a war in the last decade as well. So I don't think it's good for the world. I don't think any conflict is good for the world. War, conflict, anything that can affect business is never good for the world.
Yeah.
So let's hope, hopefully things de-escalate. The UN coordinator for the region, she said that Israel and Lebanon should find a diplomatic solution. Kamala Harris, US Vice President currently, and most probably the Democratic nominee for the president, she said that de-escalation and a diplomatic solution is the best way to go right now. So everyone is in favor of a diplomatic solution right now.
Yeah, and how do you think this will specifically impact Lebanon's economy?
Lebanon's economy, to be honest, it's already in shambles. It's everybody knows, the region knows that Lebanon is not a great country when it comes to their per capita GDP or their economic condition in regards to foreign direct investment. No one wants to invest in Lebanon. Lebanon doesn't have enough products to sell to the world. They are doing good, they're doing fine, but Lebanon was not like this. It was a very good, and it belongs to a region which is very prosperous. So hopefully everything de-escalates as quickly as possible. To be honest, as a person who understands business, the only thing that we talk about when it comes to political situations affecting business is de-escalation and lack of fire and everything. Everything good comes when there is harmony, peace, and tranquility, calmness. Businesses develop only then. Otherwise, it's always bad for business, people, businessmen, and eventually the whole global economy.
I definitely agree with you. And just to give you all a bit more context, what essentially happened last night is that Israel has kept their promise to Lebanon and issued a strike in the suburbs of Beirut. According to the Lebanese Health Ministry, at least 3 people were killed in the Israeli strike in Lebanon and 74 people were injured. And consequently, what has happened is that there are various flight industries that have canceled their flights. Specifically, Fly Dubai has revised its flight schedule to Beirut and will operate 2 daily flights until August 2, and they will continue to monitor the situation closely.
So out of the 3 people, it's 1 woman and 2 children. And we've seen throughout the conflict in the last 2 years that is happening between Israel and Gaza and Israel and Palestine. And even throughout history, if you see the conflict, it's always the women and the children that suffer. And again, not good for business. Not good for business in this regard that those are the people that the men earn for. It's always the family dynamics that we have to take into account. The family dynamics, if you hurt a woman, if you hurt a child, humanly it's wrong. Yeah. And when you go towards the moral side of it, it's wrong. So no deaths of children should take place, I guess. Children are very cute. Yeah. I have a 4-year-old myself. I can understand the pain of the parents who go through these tribulations. So I would just say that de-escalation.
Yeah, definitely.
Stop fighting and get to a table, talk about the problem. And it's not like that Israel is not suffering from economic setbacks because of these conflicts as well. War always has a cost. It always has a cost attached with it. And no one wins in a war. Everyone loses money, everyone loses resources, everyone loses business, everyone faces trade restrictions. Any conflict that Israel is involved in right now, or any other country in the world, globally we see there are a lot of other conflicts going on. No conflict is good for business.
Yeah.
I would say everyone should just take a chill pill, I guess.
I agree with you. No conflict is good in business. And, you know, speaking in conflict, many people as of lately are very conflicted about the Olympics in Paris. They are saying that it's very unethical, and something specifically that has occurred is that they have banned the hijab in the Olympics. However, the UAE brand Lara Active, known for its stylish and functional modest wear, has used AR to bypass the hijab ban. Essentially, what it is that they teamed up with Tactical, this innovation studio, and they created this virtual try-on. And a virtual try-on, it's kind of like Snapchat. You know, when you go on Snapchat, you put on a filter, and essentially what it does is that, you know, it basically creates an AR lens that depicts Marianne, France's symbol of liberty. And you will, you know, instead of seeing her, you're going to be wearing a hijab instead of her traditional Phrygian cap.
Mm. Yeah, it's good to be honest. The good thing about it is after, like in the last 2 or 3 years, we have seen AI take a central role in everything we talk about in business. I remember I read a report recently that in the last year, the startup industry saw that nearly 75% of the business went into generative AIs. And combine that with our augmented reality that we're seeing. We've already seen augmented reality on a lot of social media channels, Instagram, all these filters. These are all augmented reality. So people having the power at the very base, people having the power to use AR to make a change, it's a very good thing.
Yeah,
and
I agree
that also shows that Paris Olympics is not doing good. They spend $1.5 billion on cleaning the Seine River because a lot of water events, aquatic events were supposed to happen there. But last night we also saw that the men's triathlon race was cancelled. So to be honest, Paris is not doing great as a host. France sports minister bans the hijab, the opening ceremony We also saw how controversial it was. It divided opinion. A lot of people were in favor, but a lot of people in this region, especially Middle East and GCC, the Muslim majority countries, they were very against it. And even the Christianity, it depicted the Christianity emblem. So those people are not happy as well. So I guess Paris has to do better. They have till August 11.
The Olympics, they have time.
They still have even a day is enough to make your image better. So I guess they have time. They should go back and revise whatever they're doing. And Lara Active, I should say, we should salute them.
Yes.
They came up with a very, very innovative idea of taking it a notch further and putting a hijab on the emblem of Paris Olympics. That's a great story, to be honest. And again,
a
UAE-based
story.
Brand, I think this region and the country that we are in, UAE, they're doing great in AI, AR, VR, whatever you say, technology-wise, they're doing great. So this would have come from here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, we're seeing here how AI, it can bridge innovation and culture together. However, could it also disrupt relations? Because not everybody salutes what they did.
Obviously, see, everything that you do in the world, there will always be one person who won't like it.
Yeah.
There will always be one person.
That's
it's always
true.
The ratio of 99-1. And if you're doing something that everyone likes, you're not doing something new or something great. So I personally believe that taking these initiatives, and it's not like they hurt any religious sentiment, or they hurt any country's foreign policy, or they hurt any business. It was just a very creative campaign around what was being done by one country and what the women should have the right to do. That the Lara Active is basically preaching that women should have the right to choose.
Yeah, and it's
very cool. Yeah. The simple message is very simple.
It's very ironic, actually. The criticism that they received was that by them doing this, what they're doing is that they're not respecting Christian values and French values.
Yeah.
However,
and
in itself, nuns, the hijab ban is not respecting Muslim values.
Yeah, see, covering the head is, if you go talk religiously for a bit, every religion has headscarves or head covers in some form. Every religion, all the Abrahamic religions, at least that I know, have head covers of some sort. So banning them outrightly is wrong. They could have put in place a policy where if you're doing a hijab, you can't participate, maybe. But making sure they participate and not wear the hijab is also a problem.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
You can't force someone to do something according to your rules. And to be honest, I'm a very staunch feminist. I believe in the rights of women. So I would personally say that a woman should have the right to choose what she puts on
her head. Do you ladies hear that?
Yeah. They should be able to choose if they want a hijab or they don't want a hijab. It's their personal choice. And it's an individual's choice at the state level as well. If the government is banning a hijab, that means they're taking the individual's right away from them. Mm. So what does that say about the European? Obviously, France is in Europe, so whenever we talk about religion, for example, something happens in the Middle East, some country does something, they say it in the Middle Eastern country. So France is in Europe. What does it say about the European individual power? There's already a lot of criticism on the cameras that they've put. There's so much scrutiny, so much eyes that are on people who are not even related to Olympics. The normal people who are living in France, they have so much. So the individual freedom is being affected here.
Yeah, I definitely
agree.
Be it
women with hijab
you.
Or be it with the people with cameras on them 24/7.
And, you know, the Olympics, it's something very memorable. People don't forget the Olympics.
And Olympics is a sign of freedom.
You know, even when I was watching the opening ceremony for France, I remember people in the comment section were like, you know, I really miss the Olympics in Beijing. People remember the Olympics, and they will remember this.
Paris.
They will remember how they banned the hijab. And do you think this will impact, you know, future business relations with France?
Obviously. See, when you talk about, there's this policy in the EU that the EU countries do business with themselves. So the tax rates and the tariff, they're very less. So when someone else from the European region does business with Europe, they pay a lot of taxes. So you have to have a political philosophy, a political, it's like an agenda, consider it a 10-point agenda by the European Union. If you want to do business with any European Union country, you need to do all those 10 things. So now I guess when capital is moving away from Europe, the Middle East, which we think currently right now is the hub of economic activity, they will come up with their own agenda now, and they will surely include a point that France doesn't, or any European country should follow, should respect at least the religious sentiments of other people. So this should be done. This will be done, to be honest, in the next 5 or 6 years. The last story we are doing today is about also this factor that this region is growing in terms of everything, be it technology, be it tourism, be it the retail sector, the manufacturing, trade, foreign direct investment has been increasing year on year. Every year, people from outside of the Middle East are coming into Pakistan, coming into the Middle East and investing money here, millions of dollars. So I think there will come a point when Europe will realize that whatever they're trying to do, the Middle East will eventually push them back and tell them, please not sit down a bit.
And that,
and come on similar terms. Don't hurt our sentiments. We will not hurt your sentiments.
Yeah, and you know, a business hurting other people's sentiments, it will definitely impact your growth. I agree with you on that. You know, there's something that you said that really intrigued me. You said that if a business is not making at least one person mad, then they're not doing business right.
Yeah.
See, when you go out to be a creative person, when you go out to be a person who, for example, see the Nike campaigns, see the Adidas campaigns, all the campaigns, whenever we see an ad today, we see it on social media first. And we realize that they're doing something different. And still, they do something for the better, but still there are people who say, oh, it's wrong. Oh, why are you highlighting this? Oh, I remember I saw a campaign recently where they used a person with the Down syndrome. And some people still came and said, oh, why did you use him in a, as an actor or something? So people will always have.
Yeah.
So if you want edge in this world, in this super crazy social media centric world, you need to create something that also disappoints someone.
Yeah.
And because you then know, you're making the change.
Yeah. You know, speaking about disappointing people and making people happy in the business, let's talk about boycotts. You know, since 2020, the boycotts have finally contributed to the first sale decline in McDonald's. So McDonald's has reported its first global sales decline in over 3 years, with a 1% drop in comparable sales for the second quarter. This decline contrasts with analysts' expectation of a 0.5 increase.
Yeah, McDonald's, Starbucks, KFC, basically Yum Foods, which owns KFC and Pizza Hut across the globe. You name any big brand that has been on the boycott list created by people in this region who are against Israel's occupation in Palestine and the conflict, basically. And they're on the side of Gaza and Palestine. You see any brand, they've reported their sales have dropped over the last year. Even the 2023, last year's numbers when we saw the boycott was at its peak. To be honest, I think it has toned down a bit right now. But in 2023, every quarter they reported losses, or at least if they projected a profit of 10%, they got a profit or a surge of only 2-3%. So that's loss for them. That's a big loss for them. And
I definitely think that boycotts, they work on businesses when there's peer pressure from the media.
Yeah.
They definitely work when there's peer pressure, because we see, you know, there are many brands that, you know, support Israel, but only some of them receive the brunt of the boycotts. And I truly think it's because of the criticism online. You know, it's good to hold businesses accountable. However, do you think there are other people who are affected by these boycotts economically?
The people who work at those branches or at those franchises or at those companies, the students, the part-time workers, they get affected, obviously. But I believe in the theory that for the greater good, sometimes you have to make small sacrifices. And people who are working there, some of them were, if you see the reports, the stories done by a lot of publications, you see people talking to them and they're like, fine. If they're doing this thing for a good cause, we'll find something else, we'll find a new job. But boycotts especially, they become a very big thing. And I personally feel boycotts don't affect global, these giants very much, because even in this news, we saw that it's only 1%. It's not like 10% or 20%, those are big numbers, 1%. But at least it's affecting businesses. And businesses, actually frame the political philosophies, political landscape of the countries. So if a big business, which is US-based, suffers loss due to a boycott, obviously that pressure will go to the country as well. So businesses suffering will eventually lead to a change of political will.
Yeah.
And mainly, I would just say, continue the boycotts.
Yeah.
I am in support. I guess a lot of people in this region are in support. We saw Indonesia taking a government-level stance against in favor of these boycotts and against products from the Western markets. On a government level, that got affected. The last quarter of this year, Unilever, one of the biggest FMCG brands, that suffered a great deal of like 7 to 8% loss in the buying of products. I think they work. To be honest, they work. But the only con or the downside is that some people who actually work in those companies or in those branches of McDonald's, which have been closed down due to bad performance, they suffer.
Yeah,
that's only the downside.
Yeah.
But I guess if those people are in favor of boycotts, that's good. Maybe sacrifice for a very, very big cause, I guess.
You know, it's really interesting that you say that boycotts work, because a few days ago I said that they don't work.
Yeah, but see,
because I think people boycott by convenience.
This Gen Z thing that everyone is talking about right now, the Gen Z is actually very active on social media. So boycotts do work now. If you talk about millennials like me, like the last generation before Gen Z, for us, maybe they didn't work, because social media in the last 10 years has become a very big and very important part of everyone's policy. Every business now prefers spending more on social media and less on the traditional newspapers, TVs, radios. They spend, I guess, if you want an estimate, 80% of the spending, the marketing spending and the PR spending is on social media.
Yeah.
And Gen Z is social media savvy.
And
they are the new clients. They are the new customers. So businesses have to understand that if they want to keep Gen Z happy, they have to understand their sentiment.
Yeah.
The sentiment analysis has to be pretty clear. They need to hire Gen Zs to do a sentiment analysis of their own generation.
See.
And then base their policies, their business policies, how they will do business, which cause they will support and which cause they will not support according to that.
See, I definitely agree with you in the sense of that, you know, businesses, they have to know what their consumers want. However, I don't agree with you on the point that boycotts always work, because different consumers want different things.
Yeah.
For example, for me, it's very easy for me to boycott Starbucks because I don't like coffee.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Boycotts, they're very convenient. They're depending on what the consumer likes and what they don't like.
But I would say we have to take, whenever we're considering data, we have to take exceptions out. You don't like coffee, a lot of people do. So the general sentiment is that a lot of people like coffee. So, and a lot of people love Starbucks, Costa, there's Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons is Canadian, so you go to Canada, you see everyone with a Tim Hortons cup in the morning. It's like a cultural thing. If you're not holding a Tim Hortons cup, you're not Canadian in the morning. So yeah, for those people, it actually works. So if those people who are regular buyers, there's this thing in business that you don't focus on the buyer who just comes to you once and buys and leaves. You focus on the buyer who is a repeat customer, because that person gives you money every day. So if the repeat customers are boycotting, that affects business. So yeah, your point is good in some regards.
Yeah.
But
I see what you mean.
Positively disagree with you that it actually works.
We have something exciting to announce. So Saudi Arabia has submitted a bid to host the FIFA World Cup 2024, aiming for a historic 48-team tournament.
Yeah, FIFA has expanded the tournament to 48 teams. It's usually 36 teams. Formerly, it used to be 8 teams also. So, and the good thing about this is, in December, the FIFA will visit Saudi Arabia. They'll take a look at all the plans. Yesterday night, they announced another stadium in Riyadh. 2 days ago, we did a story about another stadium that they're building. So Saudi Arabia is putting in place the plans already. It's 2034. It's 10 years away. We saw that with Qatar as well, that 10 years before they were granted the World Cup in 2022, they hosted the World Cup. 10 years before, they started construction. Very good for business. Qatar opened up a very huge market. Everyone was trying to go to Qatar to take their piece of the cake. from the building of the stadiums, and they built great 9 stadiums, and 3 of them were like sustainable. They converted them, they scrapped them. So Saudi Arabia will obviously follow that kind of plan. Good for business, good for the region. Australia and South Africa were in line. That is like 99% confirmed that Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup,
yeah,
because the other two contenders have pulled out. So until and unless there is a very rare possibility that someone else jumps in, that we want to host it, Saudi Arabia is for sure 99% confirmed your host,
yeah,
for the 2034 FIFA
and
World Cup.
You know, I think this is really beautiful because it aligns with their diversification, yeah, plan for 2030.
Yeah.
You know?
And Saudi Vision 2030, we've seen, I recently visited Saudi Arabia like 2 weeks ago. And when you go to the cities, I went to Jeddah, Riyadh, Makkah, you go to the cities and you realize that they are building something. To be honest, in the Middle East, if you talk about development, I personally believe construction-wise, real estate-wise, development-wise, business-wise, UAE is a lot in front of Saudi Arabia. Obviously, Saudi Arabia is a bigger country. But Saudi Arabia is now becoming something else. It's becoming a whole new giant, to be honest. The NEOM projects, the new Murabba projects, you talk about any
the
region.
The real estate projects.
Yeah, you talk about, yeah, any neighborhood in Saudi Arabia, they're building something. So with that, getting a Sports World Cup for 2034, it's going to be great, not only for Saudi Arabia, for the region, for Middle East, for GCC countries. We've already seen in the last, to be honest, I am in love in this, I'm in love with this region, because every business, every person is trying to establish an office in either Saudi Arabia or UAE or Qatar, or they're coming to this region. So business wise, it's a great news for the MENA region. And I hope that sports, there's a thing called sports tourism as well. Qatar brought a lot of tourists to Qatar, the world opened Middle East to Qatar. So I personally think the World Cup in Saudi Arabia will be great for business.
Yeah, and with that being said, if you love this region like Majid does, if you love business, do make sure to tune in for our next show tomorrow morning. Thank you. Thank you for making it today.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Bye.